Hey everyone, Brock Cannon here. Welcome back to the podcast. This is episode number 42. You guys, it's always an honor when you get to have a conversation with one of your mentors. I recently just spent a week in the high mountains of Colorado with this guy. He's the man who trains the trainers himself for Wim Hof. He was my trainer, and this guy, I will tell you what, pushed me beyond my comfort zone in a big, big way. He's a humble student. He's always testing and measuring new things. And he has a brand new book out called Mastering the Stressors, Mr. Matt Soul. The book's about five ways we can master our stress response. And in this episode, we talk about the five things themselves: fight, freeze, fast, fuck. Yeah, you heard it right. Fuck. And breathe. And Matt and I honestly could have probably talked for another 2 hours, and I'm going to have him back on the show because it was that good. And I hope that everyone really tunes in for this one because there's some very easy to implement things. And also, you're going to be able to understand this from a scientific level. And Matt is one of the smartest humans that I know and able to explain this in a way that is just like, wow, I get this. You're going to be able to reframe how you view stress as a quote-unquote negative thing to a more positive thing. And I think you're going to get very, very excited by the different modalities that we talk about in here. So, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, let's jump into this episode. Enjoy my conversation with Mr. Matt Soul.
All right, everyone, welcome back to the Brock Cannon Podcast. I'm your host, Brock Cannon, and so excited today to be joined by Matt Soule, who I could go on and on about. We're going to have an amazing conversation today. Matt was my trainer, my teacher. He's my guru when it comes to anything with the Wim Hof method, breathing, mastering your stress response. And I wanted to have him on today because he just put out a brand new book, which is literally three books in one, which we're going to talk about. It's like an unbelievable book. I plan on not just reading this, but going back and highlighting and studying it over and over because there's just so much good stuff in it. So Matt, without further ado, brother, welcome to the show.
Brock, thank you so much for having me today, man. That was a killer intro and I'm very honored. Thanks, man.
Hey, good to have you, man. So for our listeners that aren't super familiar with you, would you mind just giving us a little bit of your background, you know, kind of where you were born and raised and where you are now and kind of just your day-to-day and what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up in the Southwest in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And, you know, about 10 or 12 years ago, well, a little bit more, 13, I moved up to the Pacific Northwest to Seattle. So I'm primarily based out of Seattle, Washington, and my job is I'm an entrepreneur. Right now, I've run a martial arts school for the last decade. It's been a fantastic experience. I am a Wim Hof Method instructor as well, and I'm a teacher's trainer, so that means that I teach the public, but I also train incoming instructors for the method. So that's a very exciting job, and basically I've tried to center my focus around modalities that help us combat stress, right? Or use stress to maximize our peak potential. So that's really my focus and my background. And yeah, I've just written this book, so I suppose I can now call myself an author.
It's so awesome, man. And you know, we obviously just spent some time together in Colorado. For those of you that aren't familiar with what I just went through, you know, long story short, I was supposed to go to Poland to complete my instructor training. And then, you know, COVID happened and we ended up in Colorado, and Matt was my guide, my teacher, the guy pushing me beyond my limits. We did some crazy stuff. And, you know, we just literally struck up the conversation one day in the kitchen about what it is to be an author. And I mean, dude, this book is like incredible. And I mean, I remember the first day you're like, we went around and we talked about how like we spent our time during the pandemic, and you're like, well, I got to finish my book. And dude, like this is a real enormous book. So congratulations again, man, on this. And it's amazing. But you know, I want something you said, and I want to just jump right into this because I think it's so interesting. And when we as humans talk about stress, you know, it's almost always in kind of a negative light, and people want to avoid stress. They want to de-stress. They want to watch TV or do whatever else they do to kind of numb their stress. So let's open the conversation about how stress can actually be a positive thing for us. And I think this is going to be really enlightening for everybody to hear.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the key components that we need to understand about stress to differentiate whether or not it's going to be good and beneficial or whether it's going to be detrimental to our health and performance is whether or not it is either short in duration or continuous, right? The shortened duration, meaning that we get a good stress response and recover from it. That's the beneficial stress. That's what provides hormesis. That's what allows the body to adapt and get better and stronger. Then there's this other side, and this is the negative connotation type of stress, right? Where we're all just thinking about it going, oh, this is, I don't want stress in my life. It's because we experience these long bouts that seemingly never end. And our bodies get sicker. We get depressed, constantly anxious and broken down over time. And so really what we need to do is reframe our relationship with stress by finding modalities that allow us to include an acute stress response, and then we can go about our day with a new baseline of operations. We don't experience that long duration. We actually get to enjoy the peace, rest, and recovery, or pleasure, all the rest of the stuff that we get during the day, and we're not just experiencing this negative side. Brock, there's another piece, though, that I think is important, and it's all sort of gathered within this acute stress model. And a lot of it has to do with perception. So there's been a lot of work and studies around how people perceive stress and what that does physiologically to the body. So if I perceive stress as a negative thing, that it's harmful to my body, well, sure enough, your vascular system is going to narrow. So you're going to get reduced blood flow throughout. You're going to feel greater degrees of anxiety. Your hormonal composition is going to be negative, and you're going to have a worse time. If you instead perceive stress as a positive, that when you start to experience a stress response, like an elevated heart rate, your body's preparing for some kind of action, and you perceive that as a good thing, well, sure enough, the vessels are more open and blood flows more readily. So just that simple perception, and there's lots of other little hacks in there that we'll get into, certainly, you know, but just perception alone can have a profound influence on how we experience stress. So how we show up to it.
That makes total sense. And somebody getting freaked out by whatever they perceive. I mean, Matt, we've both seen it, you know, with workshops, people that have so much stress, and it's a beautiful thing to see them conquer it, but they have so much stress around getting in like an ice bath, for example, for the first time. Absolutely. Or somebody to even take a cold shower for the first time. They're like, no, you're right. Like the perceived stress of what it's going to do is so much worse when they actually can work through it. So that's really, really interesting. And I think an important thing to note. So how do we go from kind of eradicating that perceived stress to embracing that and to embodying that?
Yeah. So I think what we need to start with and is that perception, right? Start looking at these modalities as, okay, this is going to be something that is going to work for my body. It's going to be beneficial to me. And that's a good starting point, right? Starting with an open mindset and just moving through and looking at it more like a challenge rather than something that's going to be detrimental. And that's going to be a good starting point. However, it's not the only thing that we need to do, right? So actually going through certain modalities, and I talk a lot about them in the book, you know, fighting, freezing, fasting, fucking and breathing are these five modalities that we can access that will physically retrain the body as well. And that way we can, you know, redefine base levels of what we even perceive as stressful in the first place, right? And that's going to be an operation that's going to continue to pay dividends even when we're not in a stress environment, right? It's going to say that all of a sudden when I get a stressful encounter, maybe I've got a little bit of conflict at work, where I had an argument with somebody, or I've got a disagreement, or I'm trying to get my proposal in versus somebody else's proposal, and that's causing a big stress response. Well, now all of a sudden, when I go to that same thing again after training, It's not going to cause nearly the amount of stress response, or I'll recover from it a lot faster. So I may experience it, but now I come down. I'm not sitting the rest of the day, you know, totally amped going, oh, I was trying to get this in and where it provides a negative impact for hours, right? I just, boom, I'm ready to go and turn my attention to the next thing and prepare.
Right. Yeah, that makes total sense. And, you know, I want to jump into each of these five elements and go into just a little more depth and maybe have you give some examples on each. But before I do that, I'd love to just hear, you know, what was your evolution around the stress response? You know, did you grow up where you were at one point, like really, you didn't handle stress well? And then when at one point did you have kind of a shift to where you're like, wow, this is really cool. Like I can actually use the stress in favor. And when did that shift kind of happen for you? If there was one point, or maybe there was many points.
Yeah, I think the more accurate answer to that question, it's a great question, is that it's continuously evolved, you know, over time, where I've gotten sort of periodic insights. And that's really what culminated in the writing of this, because I found that, oh man, if I could just save somebody a lifetime of experience and say, hey, if you actually train these, you're going to be able to do this a lot quicker, then I'm going to share that. So to answer your question, I had a little bit of disruptive childhood growing up. I had some abuse in my house, and that caused obviously a tremendous amount of stress from the early outset. Now, to be fair, my household also had, in my family at large, I've got a very loving and supporting family. So I had sort of both sides of the dynamic. Like many of our families, it was a complex situation growing up. But having that early abuse in the household and witnessing it and experiencing all of the disruption and chaos that surrounded it really was my first introduction to high stress. And I didn't know that my body, you know, what my body was really doing. I describe a little bit of element, a story in the book that really stands out from that time, where I felt myself totally mobilizing into this really strong stress response. And for those of you that are unfamiliar with what I mean by that, what I mean is when your heart rate starts to accelerate, you know, very fast, you can feel blood rerouting to the muscles so that you're ready to fight or run or, you know, whatever course of action that's being called for. And if you get too high in that stress response, you can black out basically, you know, or start to black out. And so the sort of the end of the stress response is unconsciousness. Your nervous system literally shuts you down and you pass out. So I was wow. In a moment in my childhood where that was happening and escalating very rapidly. And I could feel myself almost going out. And as I was standing next to my garage door, trying to flee from a bad situation, and my body was like almost going dark. And then everything came back because I yelled and it like pulled me back into the present moment. And it was such a powerful thing. And it took me a long time to unpack some of that. You know, I tried to figure it out because it wasn't a isolated circumstance, unfortunately. And there were many things that kept showing up that were similar. And so Brock, over time, what that translated to was having experiences of high stress, whether it was like a potential conflict or an actual conflict with other people, or the stuff that I was experiencing at home, or any number of things that caused high stress. And I was looking for a way to vent that and express it, you know, healthfully. And what I turned to primarily early on were athletics. You know, I found a lot of respite and refuge in, you know, playing soccer, wrestling, you know, doing different activities. Basketball was a big one. I would say that overall, you know, for my youth, soccer dominated. I really pushed myself hard into athletics, but that was my outlet. But it didn't solve all the other stress responses. It helped me to learn bits about, you know, competition and cooperation and some other elements that I found useful. But that underlying sort of deal where I really to deal with high stress was hard. And it made me very awkward around conflict. I was either, you know, feeling too aggressive or too passive. I didn't know how to sort of calibrate the right balance. And so I had this underlying desire that martial arts had sort of a secret or a key that could really help. Martial arts was one of the first things, organized things that I did as a kid. And then I kind of steered away from that, to pursue other athletics, but I found it again in my 20s. And man, it was remarkable how it started to shift. And I found this martial art in Southern California that I was practicing that had some practical application and also a connection to some of the meditative and internal cultivation inside of that, like where you could just focus your mind and be pretty athletic and work on some practical defense. And I liked that combination. And looking back, it wasn't the perfect method by any means. Like as a long-term martial artist, I'd have some critiques on it, but in terms of its utility for life expression and dealing with some of the stress and some of those fears around or helplessness or fears around self, security and that kind of thing, it was tremendous. And that was one of my early breakthroughs is finding that a quality martial art that addressed that. And one of the things that it did really well is it included partner work, right? A partner-centered practice. And it was sort of my first introduction to that. And it was a clue in to say, oh, that's an important piece. And I didn't get to pursue it too long before I ended up moving. But it started me down a path to find the martial art that I now teach a lot of people, which is Chunzhou. And this one is a very partner-centered practice, extremely practical, and addresses more or less all the things I talk about in the book with regard to the fight module, which means specific martial arts training. And it's around partner-centered practice and sort of the value of what that does to find calmness in the midst of a relational chaos. And so that was a real big turning point for me, I would say, early on. If I can take one more step to the freeze, it was very interesting because what I found through martial arts is that it provided me peace and calm in pretty crazy circumstances throughout my life. I kept coming back to some of those pieces in martial art that allowed me to have, security, stability, confidence, real confidence in many different situations that were dicey. And that was super helpful. But in terms of speed of letting the stress response go up and recover, there was still a delay in there sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like it would take exerted effort in order to come down from it, or I'd have to increase my activity to kind of use the adrenaline, for example, to get rid of it. So although I would practice this acute stress, sometimes it would linger a little bit depending on the situation, especially if I was in a new situation and competing, for example, or something like that, where it called for a little bit higher response. And as I started to practice the freeze tool, and in this case, it was through the Wim Hof method. That's how I found thermogenic training, cold training. I noticed that even inside of 2 weeks, my body's ability to adapt and shift and change was very different. And it provided this new insight and resiliency around stress that I had not experienced. And I can recall driving home one day where as I drove from my studio to my home, there's a curve that you drive into that's blind. And sometimes there's cars that are trying to pull out. Well, this person on my side darted out in such a way that he was just trying to go all the way through both lanes of traffic and almost T-boned me. Right? He was just trying to get through to the other side. And my reactions were quick. My awareness was good. So I was very happy about that. I ended up barely avoiding it, and obviously caused a giant stress response where I'm getting, high heart rate, all the stuff, adrenaline pumping, everything along those lines. And literally within 200 yards, my body had fully recovered. And again, this is only within a couple of weeks of doing this thermogenic training. And I found that remarkable. I didn't even realize it until I stopped at the stop sign and I did a check-in and my body was totally back to normal.
You're like, I'm okay.
that that to me, I was like, that was an aha moment. And I've told that story a few times and I'll continue to tell it because it was such a powerful moment for me that within just a couple hundred yards, I could go from a full stress response, fight or flight explosion in my body to dead calm. And I was like, okay, we're on to something, you know, and I'm not convinced that it was only due to the cold. I mean, my martial arts training have certainly contributed a lot to my ability to handle and deal with stress, but the speed of that in that coordination, I mean, you know, just within a couple of weeks, it was phenomenal. And that was one of the big things, like, as I started to notice high stress situations like that, you know, random, unexpected, all this kind of stuff, and my ability to adapt super fast, I was like, this is remarkable. You know, let's look for more of these. What are the underlying principles or what are the underlying methods that really contribute to the body's ability to be extremely plastic? What I mean by that is rapidly adaptable, changeable. You know, I want those things. What are those things? And as I started to write the book and to look for those things in my life, because I pursue a great deal of things that make us adaptable and make us more resilient. It's probably one of my entire focus in life is to really find those things that allow us to have sort of greater freedom and peace, you know, by accepting a little bit of upfront discomfort. And so I'm looking for these. And what I found is that the five that I've chosen really are the foundational structure. They kept emerging over and over and over. Like, what are the things in our lives that provide the highest degrees of stress that are unique and yet have an overlapping feature that are exclusive to other training modalities, not to replace them, right? There's lots of good stress combating modalities that can be beneficial in our lives. And we can get into some of that. But in terms of these five are irreplaceable in terms of their ability and utility to address stress. So I would say that some of those were the turning points. And as I got deeper into this study and looking at my own life, looking at my students' life, they kept emerging. And so I kept getting these aha moments and putting them together. And so I would say that that's sort of the continuum of how I've addressed stress and some of the challenges I've met and overcome to find those insights and to push forward to this point.
Those are great, man. So you found martial arts, you fell in love with that. And I would imagine also that probably helped you balance out maybe a lot of the discomfort from your childhood and everything else. And then how did you actually find, you know, the Wim Hof method? Was that your first actual exposure to, you know, using the cold as kind of a trainer and a teacher, or how did you find that?
Yeah. So I had done only a handful of ice baths prior to that, part of my time with the Wim Hof method. And I never liked cold water. In fact, I hate it to be cold. So I tell people this all the time, because sometimes it'll help folks get past that their initial resistance. So I'm like, once you get on the other side of this, folks, it is great. And I really am an advocate because it's so beneficial on multiple levels. But what happened in my life was I'd been training like crazy for martial arts. I took over the school that I own now called Green Lake Martial Arts. I took that over in 2010, and I was I still am. I'm a dad. At that time, I was the only income earner for a family of four, and I'd gone from doing a job in finance to now being an entrepreneur and having a martial arts school as the income provider. And the school had been around a long time at that point, about 30 years almost. By that point. So it was a well-established school and it was sizable, but it by no means generated the income that a family of four really needs, right? Or maybe not needs, but would like, you know, to live a comfortable, happy life in today's society. And so it was a giant risk. And so I poured myself entirely into this thing. And part of the way that I did it is I bought the school before I was a black belt. So because of that, like I was working, you know, the background stuff, and I was training as many hours as I could possibly train to get to the level of black belt. And anybody that's really pursued a true quality black belt knows that this takes the equivalent of, you know, training 3 days a week for 7 to 10 years, you know, so put those hours together. Now you can shorten that span a little bit, but realistically speaking, if we're talking about a quality black belt, and I'm not trying to talk trash about anybody else or anything like that. I just mean, like, if you really want to be exceptional at something, it requires a tremendous amount of hours to put into it.
Sure.
And so I dedicated that, you know, it takes a long time to do it. So I was pouring my hours in, and what that turned into is working sometimes 15, 16, 18 hour days at times,
mm-hmm.
Where I'd split it up, where I'd, you know, go home for dinner or be home late after dinner to read to my daughter to go to bed, or, you know, take her to school in the morning, then work and then come back. I had sort of an odd schedule, but I was working nonstop. I was training nonstop, and injuries started racking up. I wasn't recovering.
Mm.
And as that happens, man, inflammation was starting to happen in my body. That made it actually hard, like persistent inflammation, not positive inflammation. Inflammation can be a very positive thing to recover, to help us recover when it's in the right dose. But when it's in the wrong dose, when it's constant and not turning off, it is truly detrimental to our bodies. And so I was experiencing chronic inflammation, pain all the time, you know, and not getting better, but not really finding a place or a space to stop and allow my body time to rest. And it got to the point where it was pretty bad. So fast forward, I ended up going through a hard time, a divorce, where my spouse and I just, you know, went different ways. And that caused a whole nother level of emotional stress and anxiety and difficulty and challenges in and of itself. Yeah. I'm sure many people can relate. Anybody that's gone through a divorce knows it's just horrible. And if there's children involved, there's another component to make it horrible, you know?
100%.
Yeah. So, you know, if you've got experience, I think you had mentioned during our time together that you've been through that yourself, and, you know, it's just, it can break you down.
Oh yeah.
Break you down. So I was looking for anything that would help address, you know, basically inflammation was the start. And I was talking to the founder of the martial art that I teach, and he had been following Wim Hof for years. He had been following another neuroscientist on the internet that was talking about unlocking an ancient pathway, you know, through the cold to allow us to experience better health and this kind of thing. And so I was like, all right, well, kind of look into that. You know, and cold surrounds martial arts folklore a lot. You know, you've got the Hicks and Gracies of the world that are making it more modern, but you've got, you know, the founder of Aikido that used to meditate under cold waterfalls. You've got warriors of old that would, you know, take daily cold baths in the river. You know, there's, I talk about in the book that there's a North American tribe that would basically do hand training. So they would stick their hands in the freezing cold water so that they could shoot arrows without gloves in winter and hunt. Right. So this is not a modern, only a modern thing. It's a modern phenomenon, and I'm super grateful for it, you know, but this is something that humans have been doing for a long time intentionally, not just by circumstance, because there was no other alternative, because there was a lot of that too. But there's the other side, the intentional training side, to say, hey, I can garner incredible resilience from this, and it's going to help serve these specific purposes. And so I knew from my sports days that ice on the body was always, you know, a deal to help you address inflammation and so forth, you know, after training really hard. And so I figured, all right, let's start to get into this a little bit. So I started with ice bags on my body, and it really wasn't doing enough. It wasn't doing enough to really address the inflammation. But my friend John, he kept telling me about Wim and some of the crazy stuff that he was doing, and maybe I should try to push forward. Well, the big turning point was two things. One was WIM came out with the Vice documentary on WIM was released. And I think that was like late 2013, if I'm not mistaken, or 2014. And that was a really good clue in to one, what the method was, two, the level of accessibility, and three, some actual instruction around, or visual instruction around the breathing. Because I had tried to read WIM's book, I wasn't getting it. I was trying to relate it to too many things that I had known and practiced in the past. And I didn't quite understand what the purpose of it was. I didn't realize that you're actually supposed to induce a temporary stress response and then recover from it using the breath. That idea sounded crazy. you know, early on, I was just like, why would you want to do that? That sounds nuts. You know, aren't we trying to just breathe calmly in order to make sure that we're getting, you know, a peace from stress? That doesn't, why would I want to induce stress? So I couldn't wrap my head around it early on, but seeing that breathing and then actually trying it and experiencing it a little bit, I was like, oh, wow, this is kind of cool. And once I got that, I was able to take a reasonably decent cold shower and get through it. And so that was a really big connection. And, you know, once they came out with the online course, so WIM put forward, this is the last sort of piece that really clued me in, is WIM put out a course that walked you through the breathing method, the cold training, and the mindset training. And it was the early online edition that I went into. And within 2 weeks, Brock, I noticed transformation. All of a sudden, I was able to like move my joints in a different way. I was by no means fully healed, but I could already feel like, oh my gosh, my body's moving right. I had more energy. I didn't feel so fatigued and down. I just had this lift that happened. And I was telling everybody about it, like within 2 weeks. Within 5 weeks, I signed up for the instructor course because I saw that there was the new first instructor course for the United States and that they were going to be training instructors. And I just fully committed, man. I was in 100%.
And that was what year, Matt? It's been a while. But what year was that?
I think that was early 2016. So,
wow.
Yeah. So what are we at now? We're at 2021. So about 5 years ago is really when they put that out. Mm-hmm.
Right into that and you started to notice drastic improvements in your training and your ability to recover. And probably also, I would imagine, to better deal with all the emotional and, personal stress you were probably feeling as well. So you continued in with the instructor, and then what kind of happened after that?
Well, I'm one of these people that if I experience a positive result for something, I'm gonna take it to its end. I want to know how far can I take this before there's diminishing returns, right?
Yeah.
So I was experiencing so many positive benefits, you know, psychologically, physically, emotionally, the whole bit, that I pressed on super hard. Training in this modality and so forth. And so what I noticed was, it was like, for those of you that have children, your audience and so forth, it was like watching a baby grow, right? From day to day, if you watch this baby, you see changes every day happening. You're like, whoa. Yeah. And if you look at a picture from when the baby was brand new to, you know, a year later, you see this giant contrast. So when you get a little perspective, you can see it. And I felt like I was that baby in so many ways. Every day I saw these different changes that were showing up in my life and this positive shift. And frankly, I'm now, I guess, as an instructor, 5 years in as an instructor, training at this point. And I train every day. You know, I love to practice and I still see changes happening. Like they're subtle, they're smaller, they're less frequent, but no less profound. And to me, that says a lot about a training method and a modality that can serve us. You know, does it keep offering continued benefits? And the key there is, you know, I think how you train, of course, that's going to make a big difference. And we can get into some of that if you'd like. But more importantly, it's just having a consistent practice that's going to continue to serve is super important. And for this training for me in the freeze training has been fantastic, and specifically in the Wim Hof method. And the reason I'd just like to make one comment here, Brock. I call this freeze training, and I'm not trying to conflate or confuse, you know, Wim Hof method and freeze training. They're not necessarily one and the exact same. What I'm referring to with freeze training is just thermogenic training, specifically around cold. And so there's lots of practices that do this. There's practices in Kundalini. There's ancient practices that people do. There's a method that's called, I think, Furutama, which is like, involves, you know, hiking and body shaking and all this kind of stuff. And it's like a spiritual manifestation before dipping under cold. So lots of different modalities practice cold training. There's stuff in Sistema, it's a martial art in Russia, where people douse themselves with cold water. One of the reasons that I love and appreciate the Wim Hof method, as that's my practice for cold training. So however it shows up in your life, fantastic. I think you should go for it. I just think it's essential. But what I love about the Wim Hof method is that it's got really specific guidance around times, like how to get in as a newer practitioner, the duration of stay. I think that's really important. I think it helps you to work on not only the physiological stuff, but more importantly, some of the mental and emotional pieces. That's a really critical piece. And so if you approach your cold training with some length in it, you know, obviously staying in the safe limits, you know, you don't have to go more than a couple of minutes, but not doing just 10 seconds or 15 seconds of cold dips, but actually getting some extended times, the value of that is that it becomes this environmental stress tool that helps us to address huge things within our emotional lives, right? So one of the ways that I describe the freeze tool is allowing it to show up in a way that helps us to address, you know, grief, depression, all kinds of things, because it's an environment that you can't change. We have to practice and learn deep acceptance around this tool, right? So if I go in for an extended period and I get, you know, that cold experience where I've got to change my perception and accept what's happening around me, I'm going to get the transformation, I think, on a whole nother level. So I really value, for my own personal practice, I value the Wim Hof method because it speaks to that end and it speaks to the higher value of what this thermogenic training can provide for us.
Yeah, and you know, as you're talking, Matt, it's like very apparent that I'm going to probably have you on for like a second show. Right? I literally feel like I'm like, oh my God, we haven't even talked about breathing yet. Like, you know, we can do an hour on breathing. So it's there's so much. And, you know, if you were like, for somebody that's not even familiar with the Wim Hof method or the possibility of training in the cold, like if you were just to explain, like they were a little close, like how would you explain some of the benefits to them with the cold?
I would say keep it really simple. So one of the things that is going to be super helpful for our body is to build our cardiovascular system, right? And to build all of the thousands of miles of blood vessels in our body, right? You've got blood vessels everywhere going all throughout, and they need to have their own sort of workout, right? So you work out your muscles. You know, most of us know that if I go for a run or I lift some weights or I do some resistance training that I'm going to get stronger. Well, your vascular system needs that same workout. And the best way to work it out, although certainly running and lifting weights can help with that, but the best way is thermogenic training, you know, specifically using things like the cold, freeze training, or the sauna. You know, sauna is an excellent way to build that sort of vascular strength. And so I think that's one of the easiest ways to kind of think about some of the benefits physically. And then there's stuff like on the DNA level, where your cold shock proteins are going to help protect the telomeres, right? Which are every time a cell reproduces, these little telomeres on the ends of the chromosomes basically get shorter. So one of the things that cold shock proteins do is they help keep them intact. And that speaks to how well the cell performs as it makes copies of itself. So that has to do with longevity and having a good functioning body, a good healthy group of cells that are over and over and over reproducing. So that's helpful. You know, there's a zillion different little benefits like that physically. Emotionally and mentally, we can build mental fortitude. I mean, who doesn't need to like show up with a little grit in their life? You know, we all need it. Life is hard, man. It is tough sometimes, you know, and we go through hard circumstances and we experience terrible things that are out of our control, you know, and having a practice that can help you understand that, hey, difficult things happen, they're out of my control, and I can accept that which I cannot change. And the cold is an excellent thing to have as that mirror. So there's some really simple mental and emotional benefits. If you're Brock, are you an entrepreneur? Is that your primary?
Yep, I am. Thing?
Okay, yep. So and I'm sure you've got a lot of entrepreneurs that listen to your show. You know, as entrepreneurs, man, it's hard. It's unknown. It can produce a lot of unknown anxieties. It's difficult every day, you know, that we experience. Having a cold practice, you know, is very simple to do. I can get into a cold shower for just a couple of minutes in the morning or take a cold bath or an ice bath, you know, once a week or whatever it is. I've already done a hard thing in the day. First thing when I wake up, that means the next time I encounter resistance or a difficult thing in the day, my body's already used to overcoming that resistance. So that's tremendously powerful, you know, because inevitably we're bound to encounter failure. We're bound to encounter things that, you know, we're not going to succeed at. And we need enough wins in the tank to get past that and to keep pushing forward. And something simple like a cold practice can help us build those small wins on a daily basis, foster resilience.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, for people that are curious about this, the one thing that I can say that I've personally experienced as well, you know, whether you're an entrepreneur or just somebody that's constantly thinking, you have to problem solve during the day, you have challenges come up, whether you're a full-time mom or whether you're running a company. And it's like, sometimes we can get so stuck in our heads, especially by, you know, like say the late afternoon, for example, like your mind can just go into overload. And like, I've had times where I can't think my way out of a problem anymore. And then I'll just dip in my ice bath for a couple of minutes and you come out and it's just like you're completely renewed in so many ways. And then you can come back to, and it like gets you out of your head and gets you back to a place of neutral where you're balanced out. I don't know. I think it's incredible. So I hope everybody listening's encouraged to try it.
You're exactly right. And Brock, there's a concept that I talk about in the book, and it's called entrainment. And I apply it very specifically. And it speaks to why we struggle so much when we're experiencing sort of that, you know, constant yak yak in the head, and we're elevated in our stress response, but we're sort of humming at like that mid high level. We're not in a fight or flight, but we're pretty amped, and our mind is racing. We're in that default mode network, and it's just trip trip trip, you know, future past, trying to evaluate, trying to figure everything out, and it's tough to shut off. And if you just try to, I don't know, take 5 minutes and just breathe slowly for that, it's really hard for most of us to come off of that high state. Maybe you drop a little bit, but you're still pretty amped, even if you get a little bit of respite. Now, if instead you go and take your system and take it higher, just temporarily, right? You take it to a higher stress state, and then you bring it, it allows you to come down a lot faster. It's like it triggers that acute stress. Your body says, oh, we got to marshal all the resources, boom, and then I can come back down. And so entrainment speaks to two systems that are trying to find equilibrium, right? And the analogy that I love in the book is it's a music analogy that I start with. It's kind of like when you are, you know, in an amped celebratory mood and you're just feeling fantastic. And all of a sudden you play music that is really slow and dreary and drum. It's going to almost feel like nails on a chalkboard.
Yeah. You're
the two systems, the music and you are so out of alignment and out of sorts. It will take a long time before you come and find balance with that music, right? Yes. It's much easier to play something that you're already, that speaks to the mood and the energy and the frequency that you're at already, you know? So play that music that's high and mighty. And then the next one can be lower and lower and lower, right? That's a much faster way because you engage the system where it's at. Well, a lot of the tools, the fight tool, the freeze tool, fasting, so on and so forth, these breathe tools, they are allow us to meet the system where it's at, you know, and we'll get into breathing, I'm sure, but, you know, breathing at a frequency with where you're at and then allowing yourself to recover. Like you can harness the system so much faster, you know, or taking that ice bath, as you mentioned, right? It's going to take you up real high. It's going to shut off the yak yak. And then when you get out, especially if, as you've calmly breathed throughout that stress response, now you can recover tremendously fast and go about your day. It's the reset.
Oh, I love it. Matt, I have this like vision of creating the most amazing meme with your face and like a little bubble that says, shut off the yak yak. Maybe that's like a side project when my brain is on overload. I'm going to just make a meme out of you today. That's awesome, man. I love that. And I love your music example. Like I can completely resonate with this and you'll probably find this story hilarious, but I totally get that because I was doing a 24 hour solo mountain bike race years ago. And I had, you know, I was listening to some music. I mean, you're going for 24 hours. Like you got to, you know, keep your mind right. And I think I had my dad like was helping support me and he had like a playlist that he created. I think it was Pandora back then, you know, it was on Pandora. And I had this like great playlist. And then all of a sudden a song by Enya came on and I'm out like trying to like race, you know, and Enya comes on and I got to the pit stop, you know, and I was like, why the hell did you load Enya on my playlist? And so I didn't mean to, you know, but that was like such an example of like, I was all like ready to race and ready to rumble. And then Enya comes on and it's like wanting to fall asleep. So I can appreciate that example, man. That's good.
Just dragging through the mud. And so somebody might ask, well, why wouldn't I just always play music anytime I'm stressed? You know, that's the next sort of logical question. And frankly, a lot of times it can be a very helpful resource. I don't want to deny the helpful resources that we can access. I mean, music is a fantastic one in so many ways, but there's something altogether more powerful with engaging the physical body on a level that gets our heart rate going, gets the blood flowing, gets us out of our head, right? It reroutes blood. A high stress response will absolutely reroute blood and start increasing metabolic activity. Man, so that's like changing your environmental music, right? That's what it's about. And so you just get this wildly physical response out of it that's very powerful. So yeah, music, driver, you know, these tools, they're super helpful.
Let's talk about a couple more of the components of your book, Matt. And I swear we're gonna have to come back and talk about just some of these in more depth because there's so much. But let's talk about fast, and then let's talk about fuck, and then maybe we can end on just a note with breathe.
Wonderful. So the fasting tool is regarding how we show up with food, right? So what I suggest in the book is that we first establish a shorter time window to eat, right? So that's on the physical side, we need to get more balanced with our relationship. And partly the reason, Brock, is because our body can't prioritize everything at once, right? So over time through evolution, our intestines became shorter and shorter precisely to, you know, add extra energy in brain growth and development. So what we've done today is we've got shorter intestines, but we're eating all day long, right? For multiple hours, digesting constantly. This is not a helpful thing. Like, your body has many priorities that it needs to address. And just like in the same thing, if we stay in a chronic stress state all the time, it deprioritizes all the other stuff that your body needs to do, like digest and repair and recover and all the good stuff. Like, your body needs time to do all the work that it needs to do. And so fasting is an excellent way, or shrinking the time window, I should say, to begin, is an excellent way to, one, get the nutrients you need, so long as you're eating, you know, healthfully and getting sufficient nutrients, shrink that time window to allow your body to experience and practice, or focus rather, on all the stuff that it needs to focus on. Now, periodically, once you've got that established, I recommend doing 1 to 3 day fasts, because most of the evidence that I see surrounds that, and we live in a stress-induced culture. So I think, with few exceptions, you don't really need to go beyond 1 to 3 days. I really haven't seen enough evidence to suggest that. And I know from my own personal life, dealing with an inordinate amount of stress and work and responsibilities, I just don't need to go beyond that. You know, yeah. So, you know, obviously tailor your stuff to your own life. These are guidelines. They're not hard and fast rules, but there's sufficient evidence to suggest 1 to 3 day fasts are great. And so the timing on that would be looking at, you know, a fast for 24 hours, maybe once a month, or doing a 48-hour fast every other month, you know, doing something like a 3-day fast with, you know, this is water only is what I mean, over these periods, you know, for 3 days. And it does tremendous things to resensitize your insulin receptors in order to shift how your body partitions fuel, you know, how it heightens the sense of your organs, how you can taste better, smell better. I mean, it's just wonderful in terms of what it does. But then there's the other piece, and this is the mental emotional side. And there's tremendous value in the mental emotional side. I look at fasting as what I refer to as a type of environmental stress tool. And so what I mean by that is it's dealing with the environment. And in this case, scarcity and abundance. Those are sort of the overarching qualities of how fasting shows up. And I think that's why it's been practiced a lot for, you know, religious purposes and a number of other things. There's a lot of value with that. But for our lives currently, there's those things are still true, you know, to be able to deal with the scarcity, to be able to be grateful for the abundance, even when that abundance of food might be relatively small at the end of a fast, right? You're not going to eat tons and tons and tons, but all of a sudden your relationship of what you perceive as abundant is quite a bit. And there's giant value in that. So that's how I see fasting. And in order to not induce chronic stress, in other words, we don't want our practices to just be another form of stress on the body that's going to break it down. We want it to be beneficial. And in order for it to be beneficial, it needs to be short in duration and you need to recover from it. So to have those two things, that's why I suggest starting off with some kind of time-restricted eating at the beginning. In other words, shorten your window of eating on a daily basis until your nervous system is not stressed by that at all, right? So
what would be an example of like, you know, a good starting point to, you know, get used to it before you kind of work yourself up to maybe longer fasts?
Great. Yeah. So I would suggest starting by shrinking your time window to a 12 hour. This is what I offer guidance in the book for, is start where you've got 12 hours that you're eating. This includes, you know, drinking coffee with cream or sugar or anything like that, or tea or whatever you have in the morning, unless it's black tea or, you know, green tea, whatever, tea without any additives, or coffee without any additives. Really, anytime you're going to eat anything, that's your starting time. So, and whenever you're done. So keep that, start with 12 hours. And then over a couple of weeks, shrink that down every 3 to 4 days by about an hour. And just be methodical until you can get to about an 8 hour window or less and feeling no stress. In other words, it's comfortable. You're not starving. People ask like, well, how do I know if I'm too stressed from this eating schedule? Well, a good indication is you're having trouble sleeping. You're starving all the time. right? Mm-hmm. All this kind of thing. If I'm like so hungry all the time, like the, obviously, you know, my body's in a bit of a stress state. So you can have those agitation, you know, are you emotionally agitated? That's a good indicator that you're overly stressed. So I want people to shrink slowly over a couple of weeks, and that's about all it'll take. If you're pretty methodical about it, and if you take a little bit longer, no big deal. So that's where you start. And if you're going to do, you know, 1 to 3 day fast, there's no real preparation in terms of what you have to do before or after. You can eat anything you like before or after. But as you do this stuff, you're going to start realizing what your body, what works with your body, what types of food work with your body. And it'll clue you into some real positive internal messages to say, hey, I need more of this type of protein in my diet, or I need more healthy fats. You know, maybe I need less of, you know, whatever it is that's making you, you know, have headaches or whatever, or making you feel hungry all the time.
Right. Right.
So that's one of the best ways. And just take it slow. Take it as slow as you need to go. But be methodical, be disciplined about it. Set a schedule.
And so for you, you know, and I know intermittent fasting's had a lot of buzz in the last few years. It's, you know, it's pretty common now. People are doing intermittent fasting. They're trying to fuel their bodies more on fat versus just carbohydrates, where you're going from the next high to the next high. So I think there's a lot more acceptance around this. I'd love to hear for you personally, and, you know, realizing there's we can always get in debates, you know, we've got the plant-based side, we've got the keto side, we've got all kinds of diet philosophies now, and, you know, everybody seems to find kind of what works for them, hopefully at some point, but for you personally, you know, like what does fasting look like for you on kind of a daily or weekly basis? Like, what's your kind of routine with it?
Yeah, absolutely. I tried to steer away from exact diet recommendations in the book because I know it is a pretty hot topic. And frankly, we are adapted to eat a lot of different things. So that's
totally,
you know, that's just the bottom line. We're incredibly resilient, adaptable, and we're capable of extracting nutrients on a pretty wide scale. So I steered away from that conversation a bit. But me personally, I find that I function far better on mostly a diet of red meat, a lot of red mm-hmm. meat, and a lot of healthy fats. So nuts, for example, avocado, things like that. And then I love my greens. You know, I'll have a very common meal for me is like an elk steak or a beef steak and some avocado and, you know, a healthy salad, for example. That feels great to me. I can eat a, you know, a large steak in a day, and, or, you know, I'm a hunter. So most of my meat tends to come from hunting.
Yeah.
So it's nice, healthy. It's great. I love sharing it with friends and family and cooking for people and so forth. So that's really good. I provide it on my workshops that I offer. But it's a really powerful thing for me, and man, that gets me great. You know, I get plenty of fat to fuel my body for the training that I'm doing. Most of the training modalities that I use burn a lot of fat. So I need a lot of fat.
Yeah.
And right. Healthy fats are really important for our hormones. Right. So we can, you see a lot of the conversation around protein, and protein is really important, but there's lots of quality protein from plant-based and from, you know, animal-based and so forth. There's fewer fats, I would say. And we need a lot of fat. So I try to get as much of that as possible because it fuels my stuff. So my eating schedule tends to be in about on a 5 to 8 hour window per day. I would say that's about the window that I try to eat in. I don't eat breakfast. Instead, I do breathing protocols and other things that raise my metabolism in the morning to get my body started and going. And that way it doesn't sort of stall out. I feel very energized throughout, and I usually eat my first meal. Well, like today, for example, it's what, 11 a.m. on the, you know, Pacific time, but I'm on East Coast right now, so it's close to two, and I haven't eaten a meal yet. So I'll probably eat my first one, you know, in about an hour after I get back from picking up my daughter. You know, and that's not uncommon to start eating at 2 or 3 in the afternoon and finishing at, you know, 7 or 8 in the evening.
So you'll really only have, what would you say, like a couple of meals a day? And do you do any snacks, or are you just trying to go meal to meal?
I really listen to how my body feels. You know, if I've really pushed myself, I recently got a wonderful sauna. I'm super thrilled about it. It's awesome. I've been talking about it on social media a little bit.
I think I saw that on your Instagram. Yeah, that looks really cool, man.
Oh, it's killer, man. I'm all about the sauna, and I used to belong to a bathhouse that was fantastic. And during the pandemic, it was closed. So I was really missing it. I just got it. But to give you an example, like I've been burning a lot of calories doing sauna and ice bath back to back multiple rounds in the mornings. And so, man, I'm hungry, you know, I'm hot. So during that 5 hour window, I bet I'm eating every couple hours, you know what I mean? Maybe every hour I'm eating something new. So my body needs it. And there's other times when I've got sort of less activity going on. Maybe I'm only teaching a couple of classes. So I'm not burning tons of energy. Although the classes are, you know, active, they're not burning tons of calories, so I don't eat as much. So really I try to adapt it to how I'm feeling and just connect. I try to look at one of two purposes. I'm either fueling the activity I'm about to do or replenishing the stores that I've burnt. Like that's how I look at eating in terms of its functional base. Now, in terms of its form base, there's elegance in eating. I love to sit down with people and share a meal. You know, it's one of the most powerful social connections that we can have. And so I definitely try to, you know, cook dinner and have dinners as family and, you know, enjoy that process thoroughly during the time that I am eating. But I don't just eat to eat. You know, I really try to avoid that because it's not healthy for my body. Yeah. I really feel it. And I don't think it's healthy for most of us.
Oh, I love that, man. That's really good insight. And I think you've inspired me to try it more. You know, it's interesting. You said, you know, fasting's been around for centuries. And I grew up in a religious culture where we fasted once a month, and I hated it as a kid. Like, I did not want to do it. like I would go and steal juice out of the fridge when my mom wasn't looking and like just drink grape juice because I needed calories. I was like, you know, suffering. But like as an adult now, I see a lot of the benefit of that, you know, the physical, the mental, emotional. I love what you talked about with the abundance versus scarcity kind of mindset and honing that skill and appreciating what we have. So I think there's a lot of good there. Let's move on to the next one and, you know, talk about the F word.
This one always gets the people the most, like, what, really? You're going to put fucking as a training tool? The answer is absolutely. And there's a couple of really key reasons why. Because this one always surprises people that I would include it in, you know, a book about stress. But I've had people tell me, isn't that the relief for stress?
Yeah.
And the answer is all of them are. They're all the relief for stress. Absolutely. It's just the one that we're most obviously connected to. But it does induce a stress response, very specifically, right? And that's where it shares its commonality with the rest of the tools. And it's a very carefully coordinated stress response that needs to happen in order for us, let's just take men, for example, and then I'll get to women as well. But let's just say we wanted to have an erection. Well, we need to be having, that's a parasympathetic process primarily, right? We need to be relaxed enough that we can get proper blood flow to the genital area, right? On the other hand, in order to orgasm, that's a very sympathetic endeavor. We need to have good sympathetic engagement. That's the action-oriented system at work. So this is like really carefully nervous system balance. You know, it's going to increase the heart rate. It's going to have, you know, our part of our brain is going to communicate with different parts of our body in a specific pathway that we call the HPG pathway that is tremendous in terms of our experience for stress and that outlet. But then there's the other side in terms of like, you know, we're at a point in our in our society, in our history, where we're experiencing extreme disruption to our sex hormones, extreme disruption. If you look at testosterone levels, they've absolutely been erratic and plummeting over the last 50, 60 years. You know, women's estrogen levels are all over the place. They're experiencing terrible things as well to their estrogen levels. So this is any number of problems that we're going to experience of how we you know, show up in our physical bodies. I recently heard a lady, she just came out with a book, and I apologize, I can't remember the author's name, but she was talking about current sperm counts, average sperm counts are going that she's recorded. And it's on a level of, she's gotten more zeros, literally zero sperm count for men than at any other time in studied history. And she said, if we stay on this path, we'll be extinct in 50 years. Now, that's extreme, and it's probably a little bit provocative, and I've not researched it. I heard it on NPR or one of those talk shows on the news, and but that has profound implications. And what she speaks to is this idea that our hormones are all over the place, right? Our sex hormones. And so when I look at this, I go, this is an essential tool to pay attention to. Like, men are seeking testosterone replacement therapy at epidemic levels. And if it was just to, you know, optimize the body in some way, that would make sense. But it's actually a reaction against this profound disruption. And so that's where I see the problem. And same with females. Females are seeking replacement hormones, sex hormones on epidemic levels as well. So as we see that kind of thing happening, it should clue us in to say, okay, how can we address this problem naturally first? Are there things that we can do in our lives that allow us to balance these a little bit better, produce them more, and experience better health as a result? And the answer is absolutely. And then if you need supplemental medication for individual cases, okay, that could make sense. Right. But I don't want it just to go, oh, we gotta just get all these replacements, because it's actually a very difficult thing to balance well. Most endocrinologists will tell you it's an extremely difficult thing to get it right. So always starting with a natural process, I think, is the best way. So that's why I get into that piece. And farther, we talk about different erogenous zones. I break down some of the different receptors and so forth that are in the body and how they function along the stress response continuum. And some of the more interesting things, for example, let's just take the female anatomy. There are receptors that that in the what I refer to as the primal zones, so in the genital area, that if touched with too much pressure, applied too much pressure too early, the nerve will actually block the sensation, and it becomes either numb or painful as a result. Mm-hmm. It's not sensuous. Right, so where you are on that stress response continuum is really important to how those nerves receive and experience touch. So that's a really helpful thing. So I talk about all those different pieces and how we can show up and learn at what stage is what kind of pressure and touch is appropriate. Now, we're all individuals, of course, so we're gonna experience things a little bit differently. No question about it. But there is some commonality in terms of the general experience, and at what point in the continuum will you be best served by these different zones that we need to engage to heighten the sex response. And then there's the other side, which is, and this is the sort of the piece that can maybe lead us into the breathe modality, because breathing shows up in all of these. It is the thing that unites all of the stress tools. But one of the more interesting things about, say, wanting to induce a stress response, it's perfect in the sexual domain, right? It takes us a while to go through some of these stages, especially if we've, you know, been working all day, we're a little bit tired. You know, how can I shift my attention to my partner to engage and want to have sex, right? To promote desire, to promote the idea of intimacy. One of the easiest hacks, and in a positive way, I mean this, positive way, is to engage the breath, right? Doing some high metabolic breathing, for example, while holding hands, something that simple can all of a sudden initiate a sexual response. And there's lots of avenues to explore for for heightened experiences beyond that. I just mean in terms of like a really simple thing that somebody could go and try with their partner in like now with almost no instruction would be literally just hold your partner's hand and just concentrate on your breathing. Do that for 3 or 4 minutes. It's like a warm up, you know?
Yeah.
And as you get more layered with breath work, as I talk about in the book and so forth, it becomes an incredible experience. And more or less, that's what practices like yoga, tantra are based on. It's a type of yogic practice. You know, is this idea of learning how to concentrate in a particular way and using the breath to facilitate, you know, a heightened sexual arousal state. And it's phenomenal, you know, it's absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah. Another thing, like there, you know, literally books written on it and we could take hours just dissecting that. So people, you're going to need to get the book and get into it and read more because it's absolutely fascinating. And I can really appreciate that you bring that into the book, Matt, because I think it's something that you're spot on, man. There are problems and you know, there's more natural ways to address those. And I love how you broke that down.
Excellent.
So that leads us into breathing, which you said ties all of these together. Let's talk about that just for a moment.
Yeah. So one of the things, if you've seen the cover of the book, you notice that, you know, the four F's, fight, freeze, fast, fuck, are all in white and the breathe is in yellow, right? It's the thing that kind of stands apart and yet it's integrated as part of the whole. And breathing is a practice. I mean, we do this all the time. 20, 25,000 times a day, depending on, you know, the frequency that we're breathing. And it's literally the thing that steers the stress response. It's what I describe as the rudder, right? It's the thing that allows us to say, yeah, we want to induce a higher stress response or modulate it to come back down in our daily life. We need to pay attention to how we're breathing because by itself, breathing is not always volitional. It's not always something we're intentionally doing. It can be automatic as well. And if our breathing is on automatic default at a high rate, for example, and maybe a shallow depth or even a high rate and a high depth, you know, all this kind of stuff, that can have profound implications on our experience throughout the day and our health. So being aware of, you know, how we're breathing and when we should breathe at different points is a critical facet. And then, of course, the masters of breath know that we can harness whatever activity that we're doing almost immediately through the breath, right? So one of the things that I practice, for example, in martial arts is the very beginning of class, we'll take 5 to 10 deep breaths. Why? One of the biggest reasons is as you start to do that, you begin to induce a stress response, right? But 5 to 10 isn't enough to take you off the rails, right? It's going to keep you pretty centered. It's just going to pull you into that moment. And it's followed by a meditation. And that meditation usually only lasts about 1 minute. And what we're effectively training our bodies to do as we prepare for the rest of class and the rest of training is really just pull ourselves into focus very, very quickly. For those of you that have ever experienced a high stressful situation in a moment, that naturally happens, right? You'll start taking these large breaths because it's preparing your body for particular types of action. And so then the question is how quickly can you catch it? You need that. You don't want to shut that off. If you need to fight or run or do anything that requires a lot of action, you need that. That's your body turning on. That's your lungs dilating. That's your blood flowing faster. That's, you know, your liver pumping glucose to supply your body with more energy, basically, or constituents to produce energy. So that's a critical part, but you don't want that to keep going. You keep that going too fast and you're going to spin off the rails. It's not going to be useful anymore. So for example, in martial arts, we're just training our bodies to take a few breaths and pull our focus into the now. Because typically in a fight situation or a flight situation, you have very little time to do that. You need to do it in about 2 to 3 breaths. And so we shrink that down, you know, we'll take, you know, 2 to 3, 5 to 10, whatever it is, depending on if it's at the beginning or end, and train our bodies to use the breath to pull our focus in. So that's a very simple sort of explanation around that. But then it can be much more dynamic. For example, in the cold, you know, let's just say the Wim Hof method is perfect because it does high metabolic breathing followed by, which is means, you know, increased rate and depth for multiple breaths, followed by a breath hold, which sends us into a stress response and a recovery mode, so that we can really oxygen load our body, right? And it's going to shift how we perceive pain doing that type of breathing, which is going to help for afterward when we go into the cold water, right? It's a preparatory exercise. So there's a different type of thing that we can do to shift the way our body physically experiences that stress tool. So breath is a really big one. It's a really big one. It's what unites us all, unites all the different tools and so forth. And then on the other side, because much of our day should not be spent, you know, actively doing these survival stress tools, right? They are meant to be acute, short in duration. You're supposed to recover from them so that the vast majority of your day is at rest and peace, relatively speaking, right? It redefines your base levels so that you don't experience such high degrees of stress all the time. You can just cruise through the day and just meet the demand with good, calm focus. And that's beautiful. And so how is the breath involved there? Well, you should be taking nice, easy breaths most of the time, right? You can just breathe mostly through the nose, for example, during the vast majority of your day in that case, because you don't have this extra demand to meet. So it really just helps us to reframe and to train our body to do what it needs to do and meet the demands that are required of it.
That's a wonderful explanation, Matt. And it's so interesting that the thing that came up for me as you were kind of saying that it's like, and you talk about masters of breath. I love that because there really is this, and being someone who's still relatively in the infancy of understanding and mastering the breath and learning that it's like, there's this whole other world out there available once you start consciously breathing, being aware of it and knowing how to use it in your favor. And one of the things I really can appreciate about you is I would 1,000,000% call you a master of breath. And I remember on our recent expedition to Colorado, you know, we were fortunate enough to share the same lodge, and I heard you. Yeah, I got up early too. And I remember hearing you downstairs by the fire in the morning, just breathing. And I was like, that's fucking awesome, man. He's like, here's this master of breath. And he's like, he's teaching us and he's been at this so long and he's still doing it. And then, you know, to hear you kind of break down some of your daily morning routines and just the curiosity that you have about using the breath to put it out to different parts of the body. And like, it's amazing, man. And for those of you that are wondering some of the crazy shit they put us through. So they take us to an icy cold river in Colorado. And what did we call it, Matt? The river of pain?
Yeah, the pain stream.
The pain stream. And you have to put your hand in the water and submerge it for a minute or two and then pull it out, and using your breath and the power of your mind to warm it up. And it's like, it was the craziest thing. When you guys told us to do that, I was like, I don't even know if this is possible, man. But I'm freezing, so I'm going to try it. but it's amazing. Like this concept of being a master of your breath and using that, not just like to live and get through your day like most people do, but to use it in your favor. It's like, like I said, we could have a whole conversation just on it, but I would highly encourage people to read that section and really, really study that section of your book. And I don't know, man, I love it. And I appreciate all that you've taught me about the breath.
Fantastic, brother. Here's one of the things about breath that's really interesting. And this is where it speaks to the idea that we don't want just one of these methods. We don't want just fight, just freeze, just fast, just fuck, just breathe by itself, even though each of these provides tremendous value independently. But what you just described, where you were combining, you know, the cold and the breath together in that moment, Well, it speaks to a synergistic effect that happens. And one of the things that if you become a master of breathing and understand how to include different protocols and modalities, different variables, maybe if you is a better way to put it, into your activity, you will promote rapid adaptation. That's the power of it, rapid adaptation. So in other words, if you just put your hand in that cold stream and you took it out and you just said, you know, you didn't pay attention much to it, you didn't really concentrate on any different breathing or anything like that, well, eventually it'd heat up. Your body is going to go through a metabolic process to increase and produce heat. And sure enough, that hand is going to be heated. It just might take a damn long time, yeah. Right? Yeah. But focusing our mind in a particular way and adding the breath, specific breathing with it, whoa, now all of a sudden you can heat it up very, very quickly. And your ability to do that is largely based on, have you built a neural pathway? Are you, how focused are you? How good at the breathing are you? All of those kind of things. So if you're brand new to that concept, it still might take you a little bit longer, but you're still increasing the adaptation speed. And then somebody that's at that level where, boom, we can just turn it on, man, that shift will happen extremely rapidly. And that's the power of it. And that speaks to all of the different tools. And that's why I'm really a proponent of what I refer to as stacking the tools together. It's a concept that I borrowed from my martial arts teacher, who created this, the martial art that I teach now. He was all about stacking advantages, right? Taking all of the different advantages that are possible in a confrontation and stacking them one on top of the other so that you leverage any outcome. That's the idea, because they get so much stronger as you layer them, right? So for example, if I can control distance and a response, a very clear response immediately, right? I'm not delayed in my response trying to interrupt it with extra processing. Well, I'm going to be a lot more effective by combining those two things in that initial engagement, right? And there we can stack more and more and more onto it. This is the idea of joining the two things that are already independently powerful. And then as you put them together, the synergy is greater than the sum of the parts, right? Or the individual parts rather. The sum is greater than the individual parts. That's the synergy. And so that's really what we're after. And man, magic happens. Magic happens. And the breath is one of the best things to augment on top of these.
It's exciting, man. There's so much. I love that stacking them all together. Like, and what a wonderful way to just approach life as well. You know, using all these tools to our advantage and implementing into our life. So I love it, man. Matt, what are you most, final question, actually two last questions for you. What are you most looking forward to this year, and what are you seeking in terms of growth this year? Is there anything specific on your radar?
Great. That question is a little bit difficult to answer because I'm really excited about a lot, but if I had to narrow it, I tend to live my life pretty excited and I'm fairly ambitious. So, you know, one of the most exciting things this year is I'm working on another experiment, applying these same tools to a more intellectual domain. And I won't speak more of it than that because I want to keep it a little bit of a secret, but I'm running an experiment right now using these survival stress tools in a way that I haven't applied them before, and to check the outcome in a year. So I'm very excited to see that. If the world opens up and it looks like we're on that right path, man, I'm looking forward to getting back to workshops and to train people in person on a larger basis. There's so much value in finding camaraderie through shared struggle and positive experiences. And it's just really powerful work. So I miss doing those on a bigger scale on a regular basis. So really looking forward to that. And your other question, Brock, was to do with the challenge. Is that what you
mentioned? Yeah, just something that you're challenging yourself with in order to grow.
Yeah, I'm setting a new climb. I think I'm going to do another mountain climb. That's the next formidable challenge that I'm putting on the horizon there. And so I'm in talks with a couple of guys to put that into the agenda. I always think it's really important to set a lofty goal. And for me, physical challenges are some of the best. And I had such a powerful experience on Mount Kilimanjaro, summiting, you know, in the rapid ascent. I want to do another one. So I'm going to be looking for that. Though that might not come till 2022, my 2021 challenge really is to reach as many people as I can for this book. This is a new space for me as well, and it's a challenge. So I've set myself a goal of reaching 25,000 readers, and it seems like an insanely ambitious goal, and I can't wait to see if I can succeed or fail and keep trying.
Man, fantastic. And I hope to help just put a little dent in that. And for everybody that is listening, definitely get the book. We'll have links to that so you guys can pick that up on Amazon or wherever it's available. And you're going to love the book. Matt, I love your description of when you climbed Mount Kilimanjaro, and just you're a person who embodies curiosity and running all these experiments, as you say. Like, I love it, man. It's a super cool thing. So highly recommend the book, everybody. And then Matt, where is the best place for people to just connect and kind of follow your journey?
Great. My website is mattsoule.com. So MattSoule.com. You can find workshops, classes, training stuff all on there. I also run a newsletter that you can sign up for. Gives you tips and tricks for training. And then you can connect with me on Instagram at SoulMD, as in M, Matt, D, David. SoulMD is my Instagram handle. Love to see you on there as well.
Awesome. Well, we'll send them there in droves, and I'll have links to the show notes and to your book on there and everything else. So, brother, really, really appreciate it. Not joking. I would love to have you back on the show at some point, maybe as the year progresses, see how your challenges, your experiments, life's going, and talk more, because I know we'll have much more to talk about.
Brock, thank you so much for having me, brother. It was a pleasure, and I can't wait to connect again, man.
Likewise. And thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode. Have a wonderful day.
Hey, you guys, Brock here again. I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I did. Matt is full of wisdom, as you could tell. We could have gone on for another couple of hours with all that stuff. But I hope more than anything you were able to change your view of what stress means and how we can actually use that in our favor and how you can start to be more resilient in the face of stress. So I hope that you found some value in this episode. Please share it with family and friends, as always, if you've enjoyed this, and make sure you subscribe to the show on your favorite listening platform. Thanks again, you guys. We'll see you on the next episode.